Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
What's up, Las Vegas? Welcome in. It is Cofield and Company. No Steve Cofield on this Cinco de Mayo. Instead, it is myself, Jonathan Von Tobel. Very fitting on a day like today. An edition of Von Tobel y Los Vatos on Cinco de Mayo. How about that, huh? Griffin alongside, running the board. Alex White will be along shortly as we get you set for what is going to be a wonderful day of sports after a massive, massive weekend. You can hear it in my voice. I will say, I love my children very much. It is something that I very much enjoy doing, which is being a father. But sometimes, where you put your children, when you're talking about daycare or whatnot, cesspools of disease, oh, they bring them home all the time. So we're still getting over it, but we're fired up. We're ready to go. We're going to have a great show on tap for you as we get ready for the NHL postseason for the Vegas Golden Knights. Very much looking forward to that. But I do have a bone to pick. I also do have to get familiar with everything because I haven't been on Cofield & Company for a while. With the new show, I can now be on this program. Do I have anything to throw to here, Griffin? Any production? Do I have anything like the three? Do we have to take care of any business at the top?
No.
Okay, all right, all right, all right. Yeah, just want to make sure.
Yeah, get things going.
All right, so how do you celebrate Cinco de Mayo? A little white people taco night?
Yeah, a little white people taco night, a little cheese, a little ground beef, yep. You know, simple.
My wife went to a local La Bonita and got a whole bunch of stuff. My wife is a full-blooded Mexican woman.
Oh, nice.
So she very much wanted to celebrate today. But what I find funny is she got like a happy Cinco de Mayo text from like multiple people today. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know. I feel like, you don't like real Mexican Independence Day, as we will talk about a little bit later, is actually in September.
Right.
But I do find it funny when, you know, other folks reach out to my wife for certain things. She'll get wished happy Cinco de Mayo. We have laughed at it before, but there are certain people in my family that on Christmas or for her birthday will gift her things like churro makers or like a taco stand where you can serve tacos to the family.
Right.
It is very on the nose, we'll say,
right,
with how people handle it. And today you really see it. It's kind of funny.
So do you, like, just in turn being married to her, do you kind of get those text messages? Like, hey, man, happy Cinco de Mayo. Happy for you.
Either that, no. Like, I'll get it from Steve. Steve's kind of weird every once in a while. He'll do something. The weirdest thing that Steve ever did in relation to my somewhat Mexican-ness, because my grandmother is and was a Mexican woman, was he asked me one time when the Choco Taco was going out, he asked if it was a dark day in our house. And I was like, I don't know why you're asking me that. Right. It seems like a very rude thing to ask. I don't know if I'm supposed to be offended by this or not.
I feel like that's like, what do they call it? Culture appropriation, the Choco Taco?
Yeah, right.
A little bit.
Like, I feel like I should have been happy that the Choco Taco was actually being ruled out because it was impinging on my rights. Regardless, though, I feel like the theme here to open up should be offense because it was a great sports weekend. And I thought it was tremendous. We had the two Game 7s in the National Hockey League. We had two Game 7s in the NBA. We had the Kentucky Derby. I mean, hell, we had a boxing match that I had no idea about. We'll get into that with Steve Kim a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
And if you need more evidence to the point that boxing might be on its last legs, you can look to this past weekend where there was a fight in the early mornings and I had no idea it was happening. But the reason why I wanted to stick with that theme of, like, offense is over the course of what was a great weekend, one thing really stuck out to me, and it sticks out to me this time of year, every year, and I think I get more than most on this topic because of my connection with my job when it comes to covering the NBA for VSiN, writing about the association, being an outspoken NBA fan and a fan of a team like the Los Angeles Clippers. But we do this thing every year where hockey fans have to tell you how great their sport is at this time of year. And I will call out our friends. I was listening to the press box this morning, and Ed Graney, immediately when the show opens up, they're not even 5 seconds in, he's like, well, you think the NBA or NHL playoffs are better, right? And I just don't know why we have to go there after what we saw this weekend, especially after such a good weekend for the NHL. Like, you did it. It was a great weekend. The comeback in that Dallas-Colorado game, absolutely incredible. The ridiculous scoring at the end of Winnipeg and St. Louis to then get into double overtime, and then how that game ended. It was absolutely tremendous. But every single year it happens, and it's ad nauseum, where it's just like, this sport's the best playoffs ever. It's the best ever. And it's like, first off, we don't have to do it every time. And we can go to the ratings, we can do all the nonsense, but I feel like it ruins what the weekend is. Because instead of actually talking about the performances and the sport and everything that goes on the actual ice, and this is coming from somebody who is getting all of this, who's being told, like, your sport, which, again, I don't know why the NBA is my sport, your sport stinks. Like, how about we just talk about your sport and how great it is, as opposed to having to constantly project your insecurities of your sport onto me. I get it. Like, it sucks. It's a good sport, and I hope more people watch it. But I felt like it was so loud this weekend when it came to the conversations around this sport's better in the postseason than the NBA, and I just don't know why that has to happen every single time.
Well, I mean, think about it. When you're a fan of a sport that's not, you know, American football, and it's this time of year, it's kind of hard not to jump on, especially when you have a great series of games and the playoffs are nice and they're going. It's kind of hard not to get excited, not to, you know, push it to the forefront and say, hey, look at our sport. Look what we're doing. Look how much success we're having. Because I feel like at the end of the day, I'd have to look to make sure the exact numbers. But I feel like the NBA viewership is still much more higher here in the States than hockey, I would assume.
So the recent reports, if you will, especially if you talk about opening weekend, is the opening week of games and going into the second weekend of games, NHL viewership was very down. NBA viewership was up. Now, I don't think that is like the barometer of, hey, your sport stinks, but that is it. In the first opening weekend, average viewership over the course of every single game in the NBA was just about 4.4 million, and for the NHL, it was under a million.
Mm.
So to that point, like the ratings aren't doing particularly well this year. There was a lot of different points of evidence that the ratings for the NHL weren't doing very well throughout the regular season. That stinks. It's a good product. We're an NHL town. We should want that. But I don't understand, like, maybe it's an insecurity thing, right? Maybe it's a thing in which, and Alex White's here as well, maybe it's an insecure thing with NHL fans. I don't know where you stand with the NHL and the whole NBA dynamic, but the whole point here for me is I don't understand why we have to do this. And I think that it was very loud after this weekend, where you had two game sevens that were not particularly close in the NBA, and then the two NHL game sevens that ended the way that they did. And I feel like we do it every year, and I can't take it anymore. I can't take it.
It's really funny because NBA and NHL just happen to have their postseason fall
right
at the same time. Let's throw MLB in the mix too, because all three of these sports are very similar in the sense of they are such long seasons, and then you wait for the postseason. That's when people start to jump in, and then that's when people start to brag about whichever one is their favorite between the three. But you're right, NBA and NHL get compared a lot. I would say more, I don't know if it's insecurity for hockey fans, I think it's more just trying to push it. Like you said, trying to get the viewership. It is such a good product. Like, hey, this sport is awesome. Round one was awesome for hockey. Have to give them credit for that. Now let's see what happens later on, though, because I think NBA gets more intense as it gets down to the end. Not that hockey really steps back, but I don't know if we're going to see what we saw with round one.
Sure.
With NHL.
Don't you think that's somewhat, doesn't it work against your whole premise, though? If, like your point, I'm sure hockey fans at their core would want more people to watch. But if you're somebody who is like, your sport stinks, my sport's better, you should watch mine. Like, doesn't that make it so I don't want to watch your sport?
Absolutely.
Like, that's the thing that I don't understand. Instead of that, why don't you over the weekend, why don't you go, hey, did you see the way this game ended? You should check that out. It was really cool. This is great. And we do it all the time. And again, I'm in the center of it. Maybe not that many people care. But I think in a hockey town now too, which we are, and rightfully so, this is a good hockey town because of the way the Vegas Golden Knights have performed since they've been here. I've just been amazed about this dynamic when it comes out of this weekend, where we should be lauding the performances of these games. Like, it was absolutely tremendous watching that. Now, look, I don't know about you guys. I didn't really enjoy the whole like overtime and a half that Winnipeg and St. Louis played. I actually didn't think it was that great of hockey. But the end of regulation, and then, of course, the way that it ends is absolutely great. The comeback for Dallas was absolutely tremendous. But it just, to me, defeats the purpose. But it was a busy weekend. So I don't want to get too mad. I just don't really understand the insecurity about it. It's like the Kentucky Derby just happened over the weekend, right? Can you imagine if like horse racing fans were like, "See? That's the best. You guys shouldn't be watching. That's what you should be watching." Like, dude, chill. All right? Like, you're lucky we're watching your race here, okay? Like, they don't do that, though. Everybody's happy that you're watching the Kentucky Derby over the weekend.
So is this face-to-face that you're getting this, or is this online? Like, is this through social media?
Yeah, everything's online.
Just, like,
come on.
Coming at you?
Twitter's real life. Everything. Okay. Yes, come on. It's a lot of people in the industry. It's people that we know.
Wow.
Yes. It's people. Dude, I have seen people who don't watch a second of regular season hockey sit there and be like, "This is the greatest thing I've ever seen." Like, brother, you don't watch in January. And yet you're lecturing other people, and you're like, "You should be watching this." Like, bro, watch the dump and chase marathons that happen on a Wednesday in January when Vancouver is taking on, you know, Ottawa on a Sunday night, and it's the second leg of a back-to-back. But you ain't doing that.
Right.
But you want to lecture everybody else about what they should be watching here at this point. It rubs me the wrong way.
It's like the guy who says he's not insecure about his height. I don't care about how tall I am. I don't care. But if you are constantly talking to people and you're always giving yourself that extra inch, you're always trying to say, "Oh, man, I'm feeling tall. I'm feeling about that 6'1".
Right.
If you're always talking about it, you're always talking about ratings, then obviously your sports ratings probably aren't great, and you're not enjoying the sport itself nearly enough.
Right. And I'm sure a hockey fan will get mad hearing this. The whole point here is not to say your sport's actually not that good. My whole point is maybe we should be a little bit more like open, and instead of being so standard, you know what it actually reminds me of? MMA fans can be like that, right? You know,
yes.
You're in the combat sports. Like, MMA fans, I think, are worse at it because if anybody new tries to even come in and like comments on the sport, they'll call you a casual, they'll scream at you, and then you're not allowed to watch or, you know, participate in any sort of conversation about it.
Oh, ask Stephen A. Smith. The first time he went and covered one of the events for UFC, tore him apart just because the casual.
Right.
They hate the casuals. Though casuals in every sport, that's kind of what you need.
Yeah.
You kind of need them to be tuning in. You kind of need the casuals to care about your sport and to actually be watching, because the diehards are great, but there's more numbers in the casuals and... Yeah, no, no, you're right. The MMA fans, they're cold-blooded with it.
There's a big weekend for niche sports.
That's a good point. Because really, that's what makes football so popular, is there's so many more casuals, right? They don't mind having Monday Night Football or Thursday Night Football on in the background, where, like you're saying, regular season hockey, people aren't just throwing that on. So that's pretty interesting there.
No, they're not just throwing it on. And trust me, like, I'm somebody who grinds through the NBA regular season, so I know that the regular season product really is probably not that great. But the NBA postseason, I think, has been really awesome. So let's have this. Let's take a break. When we come back, let's start to dive into some of this, because I think there's so much that comes out of Golden State's win over Houston. Not only was it a great series performance, but I think it just pads the resume of Steph Curry, who, for some reason, I think now is becoming a little underrated.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield out for the next, I don't know what, 2-3 days, something like that. John Von Tobel filling in. Those who thought you were done with me, by the way. You know, it's funny, you and I, Alex White's here, Griffin alongside as usual. We were just talking about overly emotional goodbyes that ultimately, like, did not need to be as emotional. I think, Griffin, you were producing, like, what was it, like, a year ago, I did a show with Steve over at Circa Stadium Swim before I moved to my new, like, night shift. I was like, "Steve, it was great working with you." And then at the end of it, I'm like, "But I'll probably be back in like 8 months." Well, it was like a year and a half. So here I am.
I do remember that show specifically. Where do you remember the location of that show?
We were at Stadium Swim. I remember that, yeah.
Do you remember where in Stadium Swim?
Probably like upstairs in one of the cabanas.
We like Stadium Swim, so I'll talk. We'll talk more about it.
Okay,
there in the break.
Sounds like there's something else there.
A little song.
But I mean, yeah, I'm back. So if anybody was wondering, like, what's going to happen here, I will be making regular appearances on Cofield and Company again because I'm available once again. How about that?
So your schedule is changing for your other shows.
Yes,
you're going earlier in the day.
Yes, I'm now in the mornings.
Nice.
Over there at VSIN. So I'm done at 11 a.m. So now you're not done with me. So here I am. How about that?
Hey, let's go. It's going to be fun.
I'm sure a lot of people are happy. Totally.
How do you like it? Because you've been evening for a long time, right?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, it's only been a week, so ask me, you know what I mean, in like a few weeks. Maybe I'll hate it. No, I'm just playing. No, it's great. It's great. If I'm being corny, too, I get to be a father more often, which is obviously a little bit better, too. And I get to come around Lotus a little bit more often and say what's up to everybody. And I get to watch. See, I like being on the air because we did a whole lot, a bunch of live betting stuff.
Right.
But it is hard to focus on so many things. And so you really get to sit down and watch and focus on a lot of the contests, you know, take them in as you want. You know, watching, for example, last night, the Golden State Warriors and the Houston Rockets. It was not the Steph Curry show. It was the Buddy Hield show. They end up getting it done in seven. I'm curious, before we get into, like, some of the big picture stuff, any sweeping, like, how do you, as somebody who watched that series, view what the Houston Rockets were this season and what they are going to be as we move forward? Because I have to think that if you're a Houston Rockets fan, or if you're somebody who's watched from the outside like all of us, you got to be pretty interested in what the future of Houston is.
I'll be honest. My dad had the Houston Rockets like rated pretty high early in the season, and I was pretty shocked to see that them even in the top 10. But, I mean, it panned out, right? And they had a tremendous season. So I would say fans have to be pretty excited about what's to come.
It is, man. And I think it's a larger topic, which is, again, I go back to, you know, team building and how certain franchises handle it. It is so much better to kind of build for the long term than trying to constantly spin your wheels and win now. I don't know what team I would be referencing at this point right now, but it is so much better to have the young core and to build forward and to see what you could do, because it's almost like these two teams, it's very poetic when you're watching Golden State and Houston play one another, because you can see like the early seedlings of what could be a very long window for the Houston Rockets. They still need a lot, but it's a very good competitive team that won the two seed. And then there you have the Golden State Warriors, who have been there for what seems like an eternity now, built around a core of Steph Curry and Draymond Green and the others that were previously there. From homegrown talent, the team kind of bottomed out, but did it the right way, built it up, and that's how you progress as a franchise. But we are now on to the second round for this team. Golden State is competing with Minnesota. It's funny, I know a lot of people were like, man, we couldn't get LeBron and Steph. Like, no, we get something better. We get Steph Curry versus Anthony Edwards and the Minnesota Timberwolves, which I think should be wildly exciting. And you could get this whole passing of the torch thing. You imagine we're going to get Anthony Edwards with potentially the pelts on his wall going into another Western Conference final should he beat the Golden State Warriors, having beat LeBron, having beat Steph Curry, last year having swept Kevin Durant. I mean, this could be the passing of the torch. Narratively, I think this is incredible.
And beat Denver Nuggets, right? The former.
The tip.
Yep, and then they ended up losing to Dallas. But you're right. I'm excited for this. Is it crazy that so many people underestimated Minnesota going into the playoffs? It was like we forgot what we saw from Anthony Edwards and company last year, and they're doing it again. So I think this is a great matchup here between the Warriors and the Wolves.
One thing I'm looking forward to in this storyline is Jimmy Buckets getting to see his old team again, the Minnesota Timberwolves, after the fiasco he pulled off to get out of there in the first place. So that's a storyline I'm going to be paying close attention to when the series gets going.
The bummer is like nobody's left, right? There's like nobody left from like the time he was there. Have you heard Jeff Teague tell that story about that practice, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
It is such a – so it goes back to when he was with Minnesota – and he infamously gets together like the G Leaguers and plays the starters when he's with Minnesota and beats them and essentially screams at the front office while they're all watching, pay me my effing money, and then like walks out after beating Karl Anthony Towns and everybody, calls Cat soft, like does all of that. Like it's such a great story about it. But you're right, like that is at least getting revenge somewhat on the franchise, and having that parallel there is really interesting. And I just think, to your point, Alex, which I think is fascinating, is from the betting perspective, the market couldn't get enough of the Lakers in the series against Minnesota. They were like $2 favorites. Now you have the Timberwolves as favorites. They're going to be the Warriors' underdogs. This is, how about this? So this was from Yahoo, right? This is the first playoff series the Warriors won't be favorites in since 2014. They were underdogs to the Clippers that year. That's right. How long this has been.
I saw it on Get Up this morning. Mike Greenberg was talking about it. First time they were underdogs since Steve Kerr has been there. And that matches up 2014.
Yep.
So very, very intriguing. You were talking about, you think that Steph Curry might be a little underrated at this point.
Oh, I mean, I don't think there's really any question. It's funny. I hate these conversations for the most part, but I think it was my colleague Mitch Moss who put it in like something, and I'm paraphrasing. We're not having this conversation anymore about like top five. Like if you're building a top five, who's in it? Like Steph Curry's in it. There's no question anymore. He's one of the greatest to ever play this game. He's the greatest at his position. And I mean this wholeheartedly. It's funny. I was at a bar one night and I was getting into a friendly sports argument with a guy there. And I told him and I said, you really want me to get you mad? I'm like, I don't think MJ is the greatest player of all time. I don't even think maybe LeBron is the greatest player of all time. I think Steph Curry could argue, is the greatest basketball player of all time. I think he's incredible, and I don't think there's really any question about it. When you look at what his record is against some of his contemporaries in this league, how he has done it, that single run against the Boston Celtics, how incredible he was in that postseason series, and in every single one of those series leading him to a championship in 2022, the guy is brilliant. And you factor in his impact on the actual game itself. I mean, yes. There is a very strong argument to be made, but I think it becomes now like somewhat underrated. The guy is brilliant, and I don't think he's going to. I actually think that the Warriors are about to get mollywopped here in this series against Minnesota. But if he pulls this off and he goes to the Western Conference Finals again, dude, yeah. Stop. Stop. He's incredible.
Do you think maybe that narrative about, you know, people not really including him in the GOAT debate, in there with Jordan, in there with LeBron, I feel like, me personally, maybe it comes off with just his playing style. Like you said, his impact on the game is immeasurable. Like, he changed the game on every level. But, you know, maybe that's because his way of playing with the three-point shots, and he does a lot of moving around in the court, you know, his style does – a lot of people exclude him from those conversations because they're like, you're not doing what LeBron's doing, you know, running up and just absolutely yamming it on people's heads going down into the paint. You're not the all-time leading scorer in the NBA's history. It's, you know, those type of things that really kind of exclude him from those conversations.
Yeah, I think that's probably why. Aesthetically, it is not a style that I think, like, actually, maybe nowadays it's starting to come around more, right? Like, highlight reels now are gearing more toward, like, those types of shots. Yeah. It's no longer just yamming on dudes. Now it is, like, deep three-point looks. But there is, I mean, I don't know about you guys, there is nothing like a Steph Curry avalanche game. There's nothing like when he gets going. And he is just on, and he's hitting. I mean, look at the beginning of this Houston series. What game was it? Game one, where he hits like two massive threes that nobody else is going to be anywhere close to hitting in those situations. Falling away on one foot where he's not even looking at the basket. Things like that, the ability to do those, we are never going to see it again. I'm going to weep when he doesn't play anymore. It's incredible how great he is. And we still get to watch this, and we're going to watch it again. Like we're going to talk about legacy too later with when it comes to like James Harden, for example. And I think there's a larger conversation to be had about somebody like Kawhi Leonard when it comes to that Clippers team. But I don't think we're doing enough justice with a guy like Steph Curry who continues to play at this level year in and year out. That's my piece. See? Steve wouldn't do this. I don't know why I would accuse Steve of that, but that's Steve would not do this. I want to wax poetic about my guy. These are my 3 hours, I guess, so I can do whatever I want.
Absolutely. We need more of it just to really, you know, fire the passion for these sports.
Yep. All right, when we come back, we'll get a little bit more into the association. And coming up in about, 10 minutes from now, Steve Kim's going to join us. We had big news in the NFL today. Somebody is gone, and we got to get Steve's thoughts on this and whether or not it was warranted.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
News of the day coming in the National Football League, and actually just came down minutes before we came on the air. Baltimore Ravens have decided to release kicker Justin Tucker. Parted ways with the NFL's most accurate kicker, of course. This comes amid the investigation by the league for sexual misconduct. From the statement, this is Eric DaCosta, Ravens executive president and general manager. Sometimes football decisions are incredibly difficult, and this is one of those instances. Considering our current roster, we have made the tough decision to release Justin Tucker. Justin created many significant and unforgettable moments in Ravens history. His reliability, focus, drive, resilience, and extraordinary talent made him one of the league's best kickers for over a decade. We are grateful for Justin's many contributions while playing for the Ravens. We sincerely wish him and his family the very best in the next chapter of their lives. He's also being accused of misconduct by 16 massage therapists from 8 high-end spas and well. Oh, wait, no, he didn't include that in the statement. I mean, in all seriousness, there is some criticism of the Ravens here because let's go first with the statement I just read. He is being, like, they are looking into him for this. It is a very serious thing they're looking into him for. Do you have to go over the top with the statement, wishing him well in the next chapter? He brings this, this, and that. What if it comes out that he is guilty of these things?
Well, I mean, does that change still what they are saying about him on the field and what he has done for the Ravens team?
I would say that I don't know if I want to say that he has reliability, focus, drive, resilience, and extraordinary talent. Like, if this is what we're doing, because here's the thing, Alex. Do you really think right now, if this issue off the field wasn't here, do we think that this is happening today?
I don't know, because there was a point in the season last year where Justin Tucker was missing a lot of kicks. And I was like, what are they going to do? He is a Hall of Famer kicker. Are they going to bench him? He could be a liability going into the playoffs for this Ravens team. So I think it was kind of already in the works. I don't know.
Here's the thing, and this is from Jason Lockenfora, and I think this is a great point. Justin Tucker was a declining place kicker for 2 years. He hasn't kicked in any capacity since January, as we know, right? He finally got cut today. Why? Because he was potentially exposed by what is happening. You know what I'm saying? Like, so if football reasons were the reason, why are we waiting until now?
Right.
We knew what the football reasons were months ago. We know what changed.
Yeah.
This changed, right? Something popped up. Some little tiny little hiccup popped up, and now all of a sudden we're here. Like, I'm not, it's raining right now, right? Don't urinate on us and tell us it's raining. Call it for what it is. I understand, like, just say it. Because that's exactly what's happening here at this point. Nothing has changed in terms of his performance from the end of the season until now. The only thing that changed was that we learned a little something in between, and now we're here. And I think it's a little disingenuous to come out with a statement that flowery about the guy when this is happening. And by the way, it's why you're releasing him.
So you think they already know that he is guilty?
I don't think they know that he's guilty.
Okay.
I think that a kicker who is declining with also that baggage above him,
ding, ding,
is not worth it. By the way, he is, as Florio has pointed out, he is the largest dead cap hit for a kicker in NFL history that you're about to take and spread over the next 2 years because of what's going on here. Like, there's a reason why you're doing this. But to frame the statement like this and to do it in that way, like, just stop. You don't have to do that.
JVT, yeah. I mean, don't you know, politically correct. This is what these organizations are all about, trying to be.
If I was Justin Tucker, I'd be like, hey, thanks for the flowery goodbye. But honestly, you're not doing me any favors. Right. This is not a closed case. This is still ongoing. And the fact that I just got cut from my job while this is still up in the air and the decisions are still trying to be made, like, oh, come on, man. They're not helping his case at all.
Yeah. Well,
so what would you have rather them said? We're moving on from Justin Tucker.
We have decided today to release Justin Tucker.
Just done.
Boom. We have decided to release Justin Tucker.
My question is, does the team pick him up?
So let's ask Steve Kim that on the other side, because I don't think so. Lindsay Rhodes had a great tweet, said that she doesn't think so, thinks that he's done in the NFL. Do we see Justin Tucker ever kick again?
Steve Kim, the host of the Three Knockdown Rule podcast, joins Cofield and Company, presented by Snack Nutrition.
All right, you heard it. No Steve Cofield today. John Von Tobel. We welcome in Steve Kim, though. Discuss all the latest topics, including a little bit of news that came out right before the show started. Steve, it's John Von Tobel. It's Alex White. We appreciate it. I want to start with a little NFL. I don't know if you saw this about an hour ago, but the Ravens have decided to release Justin Tucker. Obviously, they drafted a kicker as well. We know that he is being investigated, too, with what's going on off the field. What did you make of the Ravens deciding to cut ties with Tucker at this point?
I think it's very convenient. I mean, I look at it two ways. If there was ever a year where it was an easier decision to release what has become an iconic player in that franchise, and I don't know if it's quite the level of Ned Reed or Ray Lewis or Jonathan Ogden, it would be this season given the struggles that he had last year. And, you know, the question is going to hover around, was this purely a football decision given everything that is surrounding Justin Tucker? And I think people can debate that amongst themselves. I think everyone has their own opinion on it.
Do you think he kicks again in the NFL?
You know, without knowing the full depth of what's going to happen to him legally, you know, this league is very, very forgiving to productive players and individuals. I mean, look, I don't want to minimize anything in terms of the allegations, and I'm not here to adjudicate it, but the reality is if he could still kick and help you win football games, and it's found out that, you know, maybe some of the charges were trumped up or they're disproven, I don't see why he wouldn't be given another shot.
All right, Steve Kim with us here going over big topics of the day. Justin Tucker, again, if you're just joining us, released by the Baltimore Ravens about an hour ago. So, Steve, I know you're big in boxing, and I wanted to transition to that because, you know, I was just telling Griffin, like, I enjoy the sport of boxing. Like, if you just sit me down and watch a boxing match, I am in. Having said that, I see some of the names that were in action over the weekend. I had no idea these fights were happening. What am I missing out on? Can I blame boxing for this? That I had no idea some of their bigger names that were recognizable to me? I didn't even know they were fighting this weekend.
Well, I think that goes in terms of how the profile of boxing has declined, let's say, the last few decades at the very least. I mean, think about it. I mean, wasn't this weekend also when the Kentucky Derby took place? I mean, there was a time when boxing and horse racing were America's biggest sports, probably alongside baseball. Now, I would say for the most part, both of those industries, at least in our country, are, I would say, very lucrative niche sports that a couple times a year, maybe a little bit more, capture the attention of the American public at large. You know, the shows on Friday and Saturday were kind of strange. One of them was on with that Times Square where the public was shut out. It was a small pay-per-view show with a lot of recognizable names. And quite frankly, it was a critical and commercial bust. The fights were not received well. In fact, I wrote an article at Snack.com ripping the show in every way because, quite frankly, it's deserved. And then on Saturday, Canelo Alvarez, who's probably the latest face of boxing, fought in Saudi Arabia where he chased around a very, very reluctant William Skull, to say the least. And then I was in Las Vegas this past weekend. It did end on a bang with Nao Inoue putting on a sterling performance in a very good back-and-forth shootout with Ramon Cardenas. But again, your view of, like, hey, I didn't know who was fighting or when, I think you're probably in line with most of the American public.
Is there... I mean, I guess this is an easy question to ask, but not an easy question to answer. Is there a way to get better at this if you're boxing? Because, like, the way I viewed over the weekend was, you know, the Kentucky Derby, I don't know if you saw this, actually set a record in terms of money bet on the event. It was the most money that had been wagered on the Derby in its history. The ratings, I think, were up as well from a TV standpoint, too. So, like, there is, to go to that niche sport, right, there is somewhat of a desire every first Saturday in May to watch the Kentucky Derby. How can boxing do something like that where at least the big sports, the big spots, can make their hay?
Well, here's the difference. Now, the Kentucky Derby is still over regular terrestrial television airwaves, sure. Correct, and always have been. Boxing years ago, with the changing pay structure of its fighters, went to a pay-per-view model. And then more and more of their fights, instead of landing on ABC, CBS, or NBC, started going to premium cable networks. So when you have your – and what happened starting from the, I would say, mid to late 80s to now, you know, nothing ever happens just real quickly. It's what I call the slow erosion. And over time, when you start taking away your best fighters – your biggest events, and you put them behind any type of paywall, whether that's a monthly subscription to HBO or Showtime, or on top of that, a full-fledged pay-per-view event. And then what also has happened is that many of the fighters don't fight as much. There's no familiarity. So you can talk about load management ruining the NBA to a certain degree. I don't think what's happening with boxing, where your biggest and brightest stars may fight no more than twice a year. All of these things together. See, it's never just one thing. Yep. It's always a little bit of everything that leads to a decline like this.
Steve Kim with us again, 3 Knockdown Rule podcast. All right, so Canelo fights. I saw a lot of criticism of Canelo in the result. One thing I wanted to read to you, another forgettable win for Alvarez over William Skull leaves the sport pining for a new flag bearer. Is that a valid criticism of what we watched from Canelo over the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, look, that was a game of tag and nobody was it. Look, I don't think that was completely his fault. William Skull, in another day and place in boxing, I think they would have threatened not to pay him. But you know what I did notice about Saul Alvarez? He looked very slow, looked very ponderous. He looked every bit his age. And I came away from that particular fight, and not even at the end, but really in the beginning of the fight, first half, I said, you know what? Terrence Crawford, despite the size disparity, can beat him. I think that is a much more interesting matchup than we ever anticipated. And they will be fighting September 12th at Allegiant. So it might have been unintended, but it actually raised the, I don't know if the expectation, but I would say the intrigue of that fight that's going to take place in mid-September.
So Dana White's going to promote that, right, for TKO Boxing. Is that kind of like we're talking about here? Could a figure like Dana White be the injection of life boxing would need for promotion?
I see Dana White operates in what is basically, I don't want to say a complete monopoly, but there's no other game in town. Boxing is incredibly fractured, and the UFC has a system where the three letters, the organization, holds a lot of power. Boxing is a little bit more athlete empowerment centric, which is good and bad. It's really good for the fighters at the top level. They get paid a lot. It's probably not that good for the fans who don't get the fights that they always want. I don't know if the mere presence of one individual as an administrator can change the whole culture of boxing. Because keep this in mind, TKO Promotions will just be a federation of fighters fighting under one umbrella. It's not going to necessarily represent the whole sport.
All right, Steve Kim with us again, going over what happened over the weekend, combat sports. Going back to Raleigh Romero, he gets a unanimous decision victory over Garcia, but afterwards said he wasn't thinking about what was next. He thought that Devin and Ryan should get their rematch and make it a big one. What did you think of his comments after the fight?
The rematch of that? Oh, my God. That's like doing a sequel to Ishtar or Zhili. No, look, I had enough of it the first time. I put in a line that if Larry Merchant was calling that fight on Friday, and I don't know if you know what happened, but they promoted this event as being free to the public. Everyone walking around Times Square would be able to see the event for free. And instead, inside the gates, they put up this big draping so that nobody could see the fight unless you were one of the VIPs in the corral area. And I said, if Larry Merchant was calling this event, he'd say that the people that were stuck outside, not able to see the action, they were the lucky ones. That was a bad fight.
Yeah.
I thought the biggest bust of that whole event was Friday night was supposed to be a prelude to the rematch between Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney, right? Based on the nature of both their performances, it had the exact opposite effect. I don't think anyone wants to see that again.
Wow. All right. So what do you think it would be next?
That's a great question. I'd like to ask Turki Alosheikh one question, who is funding a lot of the events. I think it's okay to spend money, and if it's a bad fight, I get it. But is his philosophy to continue to reward fighters who simply do not perform? There were guys out there the past weekend who I thought that if I was the guy in charge, let's say a version of Dana White, who was empowered to make fights and to pay fighters. I'll be honest with you. There's more than one or two guys out there that I would basically say you're blacklisted for the time being.
Steve Kim with us. All right. I wanted to get your thoughts on this before we get you out of here. As over the weekend and over the last week, Bill Belichick has been front and center with everything going on. First off, just your initial thoughts on what we have seen. Are you with everybody here that is worried about the so-called decline of our guy Bill?
I mean, I don't know if I'm really worried. I think it's a fascinating story. I wonder if UNC understood what they were getting into. I think that they felt as though they were getting this all-time great Super Bowl-winning coach. I don't think they thought they'd be getting the guy that's going through this very late midlife crisis. First of all, he's a professional coach. It's been a long time, if ever, he's been involved in the college game, right? Mm-hmm. And I get it. The college game is now the pro game with the NIL. Fine. But I really wonder if they vetted this situation out with who I'm calling Air Jordan, which is ironic given North Carolina's ties to Michael. And now they're saying, they're trying to clean it up. Guys, it's too late. I tell you what's fascinating about this story. If you go on YouTube or you go on the podcast of the media and the stations out in the New England, Boston area, the knives are out. The Boston media is just trashing Bill Belichick. And boy, they've harbored a lot of resentment for the way he handled things. And they're having a lot of fun with this whole situation.
If you were in charge of UNC, would you tell them that she's got to go?
Well, again, I don't want to act like a Monday morning quarterback. I would have never hired him based on his age and the college experience. But here's the thing, though. We knew about this relationship like for at least a year, haven't we? This is nothing new. We've known about this for at least a year and a half. I think this is on UNC. They should have known better. But, yes, if you can't fire him now, because, look, you've already done spring ball. I don't know who you can actually hire right now outside of an interim situation. I would have a meeting with Lombardi, his GM, and Bill Belichick. I'd say, look, we can't have any more of this. And I think the pressure is actually on now to win early, because I do think UNC, just by human nature, they must be having some sort of buyer's remorse.
It's kind of, you know what, like, so I'm a Colts fan, and I hate Bill Belichick in like a sports fandom sort of deal. I did kind of feel bad. Like, you're watching the interview. He's got the ratty shirt on. She's clearly in control of everything. I feel like maybe the guy was just lonely, and maybe deep down he's just sad and doesn't want to let go because he feels like that's the only connection he has. What if we're all being mean to him?
Right, but here's the thing. There's nothing wrong with having a relationship, and I'm not judging the age difference. That's not my business. I think what, from UNC's perspective, is why not just make it private?
Yeah.
Why does this have to be so public? Like, do I really think that he's the only football coach or a gentleman in charge that has other relationships that are beyond the marriage? I'm not naive about this. Here's the difference, though. Nobody trots out those relationships so publicly. And it's clear that young lady has a say in the inner circle. In fact, my thing is, folks, she is the inner circle at this point. And I don't think UNC really understood that.
Three Knockdown Rule podcast. What's going on in the pod? Let us know what else is going on with you, Steve.
Well, I'll be on with Coach JB, and I'll be making my regular appearances with Jason Whitlock on Fearless. And the next Three Knockdown Rule with Mario Lopez and I will be we have scheduling issue today. We'll be filming the next show tomorrow as we talk about everything that happened this past weekend in boxing.
All right, Steve. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Three Knockdown
Thanks,
Rule pod.
Have a great week.